For 19 years, Dewey the cat made friends, warmed hearts, and changed lives at the Spencer Public Library. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Dewey's best friend, Vicki Myron, is here today with more Dewey stories to share. And in her new book, Dewey's Nine Lives, she also tells the stories of a number of other remarkable cats. Cat behavior expert Carol Grillion will also be here, and we'd love to hear about the cats who have touched your life. Also, it is Iowa Public Radio's fall membership drive. This time, we are trying something new. We're trying to keep the drive very short. We will only be coming to you and asking for your support for 3 days. If you value what you hear on Iowa Public Radio, it is time to do your part because it is your membership dollars that make it all possible. Give at iowapublicradio.org or call 800-897-9204. The news is next. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Dewey the Cat's remarkable story began in 1988 on a very, very cold January day in Spencer, Iowa, when Vicki Myron, the director of the Spencer Public Library, found this 8-week-old kitten nearly frozen to death in the library's book return. For the next 19 years, Dewey greeted nearly every single person who walked through the doors of the Spencer Public Library. He made a lot of friends. He brightened a lot of days. And in fact, he even changed some people's lives. Vicki Myron told his story in the best-selling book Dewey and has just published a new book, Dewey's Nine Lives, that tells the stories of many other remarkable cats. Hello, Vicki.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm happy to be.
And I know you've told the story thousands of times now, but for those people who haven't heard it, what happened on that first day when you found Dewey in the book return?
Well, it was about 7:30 in the morning when I pulled up to the library, is my usual time. I was usually the first there to start the coffee and empty the book drop of the books over the weekend. And I had started the coffee, taken off my coat, and I was just beginning to get ready to empty the book drop when my assistant said, "I'm hearing a sound coming from inside the drop." And I heard the sound. It didn't sound like a kitten at all to me. It was I was a little trepidatious about opening it up and reaching my fingers in there. I was hoping for something cute, like a ground squirrel or something. But I finally got up the courage to open it up, and the book drop was absolutely full of books, clear to the top, and there was this tiny little kitten underneath a book that was, like, tented over him. And it was just as cold inside the drop as it was outside, 15 below, because the book drop had been jammed open by a bag of books, so there wasn't any warmth in there at all. And when I pulled him out, he just, I could tell that he was starving and freezing, but he was purring at the same time. So we gave him a bath to warm him up, and he purred through the whole bath. And then he kind of stumbled around on his little frozen feet and went to every staff member who was walking in the door to rub their hand and purr and rub against them. And I could tell he was very sociable, so that's when I got the idea that maybe he could become the Spencer Library cat and live there.
Well, and I know that you have told many of the stories of Dewey's 19 years at the library. He did become not just a local celebrity, but a worldwide celebrity.
Absolutely.
But in this new book, you tell another story that didn't make it into the first book, a story that you didn't really know about for the first book. Can you tell me a little bit about Dewey's relationship with Yvonne Berry?
Well, there were a few people who had stories that I heard after his passing from people who had a special relationship with Dewey that I didn't really know about. Yvonne wasn't the only one, but one of the things that the staff would do on occasion was open the women's restroom door, which was Dewey's favorite secret place to go, and he would love to jump on the counter and have you turn on the water really slow and then watch it dribble down the drain. He would watch it for like an hour and play with it with his paws. And I didn't realize that Yvonne had picked up on this and that she was doing it every time she came, she was letting him into the restroom to have his little water game. And I didn't know that she had lost her cat, Toby, and how Dewey took care of her. And those were the kind of stories that surprised me when I was out touring with the first book, is how many other people had major impacts in their lives from either Dewey or their own cat.
And that led you to start collecting some of these stories?
It did. I got tons of email and letters and snail mail and talked to a lot of people at signings, and they all had wonderful stories about their cats. And so Brett Witter and I, who is my co-author, started separating letters out and trying to decide which ones were worthy of putting into a book to show the impact that an animal can have on someone's life.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about Yvonne. She was a very shy woman who didn't have a lot of friends in the community. She wasn't particularly outgoing. She had strong family connections, but her best friend in the world was her cat, Toby.
Right.
Who was very much like her, the way you describe them. It sounds like they had a lot in common. They were both shy.
Very shy.
Had a very strong bond with each other. But you talk about in the book how when Toby was 13 years old, she had to be put to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And Yvonne, of course, was just devastated. And she came to the library. And what did Dewey do? Normally, he would ask her to play with him. But what did he do that day?
Well, he would normally ask to play with him, play with her. He enjoyed Yvonne a lot because she loved cats. And she would always seek him out as soon as she walked into the building. But on that particular day, I wasn't aware of it until Yvonne told me later, but Yvonne, instead of seeking Dewey out, decided to sit in a chair because she was grieving for Toby. And Dewey came over, found her, jumped into her lap, and sat with her for 2 hours while she petted him and talked to him and cried a little bit and talked about Toby. And he just spent some extra special time with her that day, and that was part of what we call Dewey's magic, is there were other people, thousands of people, who came to me after Dewey's passing and say, well, I know that Dewey liked everyone, but he and I had this special bond that no one knew about. So Dewey's magic, I guess, is that he made every person who came in there feel like they were the most special person in Dewey's life.
With us today as well, we have Carol Grillion, who is a cat behavior expert. She's also the president of the board of the Animal Rescue League in Des Moines. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
And I asked you to come on the show today because we're going to be talking about a number of remarkable cats in addition to Dewey. And I think it helps to have a little insight into the behavior of cats. And I know a lot of people don't think about cats as being like Dewey. They think that cats are more off-putting, that cats want a little more privacy and are more independent. But this behavior that Vicky writes about with Dewey, is that something that you see with many cats?
We absolutely do. And, you know, Charity, I was actually one of those people who I was a self-proclaimed animal lover, but really focused on dogs when I started volunteering for the Animal Rescue League about 20 years ago. And by a fluke, met a cat named Azuro that I adopted. And he totally changed my opinion of cats and got me into really studying cat behavior. He was the catalyst that, no pun intended, kind of sent me into this world. And I have found that cats like Dewey and cats like Azuro are actually the norm. And many people say to me, oh, I don't really like cats. You know, and I'll say, well, you've probably obviously never lived with a cat or never had an interaction with, you know, a cat like Dewey and cat like Azuro. And across the board, most of them had not. And then, you know, through the years, friends of mine had adopted cats, never had a cat before, and all sorts of those things. And story after story of hearing that they are like cats like Dewey and cats like Azuro and millions of other cats that have these wonderful, amazing personalities that really affect and bond with humans.
Well, we were talking a little bit earlier about Yvonne Barry's cat, Toby, who mm-hmm. who I probably meets a lot more of the stereotypes of being very shy and mm-hmm. you know, not wanting to interact with a lot of people. Dewey is what I've always called a dog cat. I have a cat
Definitely.
Named Arthur who's very much like that, where he greets every person who comes through our door. He interacts with us constantly, and he is there as much as our dogs are there. When you look at the cats that come into the Animal Rescue League and the cats in your life, Carol, do you see sort of a breakdown of cats that fall into these different categories?
Definitely. Definitely. And that's funny you call them a dog cat. We actually call them dog cats. And we will have people who email us or come into the shelter and say, I'm really looking for a dog cat. And we know exactly what that means. And even those cats that are shy and maybe more, you know, aloof and held back, they probably ultimately have amazing relationships with one or two humans in their families. But these dog cats are very common. They're easy to read and they're easy to see at the Animal Rescue League just because of their behaviors.
And can you identify, you know, when Vicky was talking about Dewey on that very first day, he was an 8-week-old kitten. And I've never met any creature more confident than a male kitten. But but can you read that behavior very early? When a kitten is that small?
You know, we can to some level. And some you just have to wait and kind of see how it develops. But a lot of those kittens I have found in my experiences over the years, and oddly, mostly have always been male cats. And I hate doing that because, you know, that's the general, just a general analysis over my 20 years at the shelter and, you know, 12 years focused on cats and cat behavior. But you can see that. They are the ones who confidently hold their heads up and walk up to you. You know, in the cages at the Animal Rescue League and walk right up, or the older cats that, you know, the minute you open the door to these community cat rooms we have at the animal shelter, walk right over to you and immediately look at you in the eyes and, you know, want to seem to have this relationship with you. And across the board, normally those are the cats that end up being what we call dog cats.
Vicky, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the other cats you tell stories about, and one of those cats is named Spooky, and he had a very special relationship with a man named Bill. Tell me how Spooky came into Bill's life.
Well, that is one of my favorite stories from the new book, too. Bill wrote to me, and I got in touch with him because I was so touched by his story, and we knew that was one that we wanted included in this book for sure. Bill Bazanson was a Vietnam vet who came home from the horrors of Vietnam, of the things that he'd seen over there. And not only was he ignored by the public, he was also left to his own devices to reacclimate into the society. And he had a very hard time doing that. He had post-traumatic stress syndrome and didn't realize it at the time. So Bill had a very difficult time reconnecting with the human race. He would just stay somewhere for a while, make a little money, and every September, which was the anniversary of the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, he would get this sudden urge to move and just wander the country, pretty much disconnected from society completely. And one night, about 5:30 in the morning, little town, he was driving through and he was stopped at a red light and heard a thunk on the roof of his car and got out to see what had landed on top of his car and found this 3-week-old kitten that had been dropped by an owl. The kitten was severely injured and Bill was like, what am I going to do here? And maybe not so coincidentally, there was a veterinarian's office right down the street. It was dark, but the office was there, so he took the kitten, ran down the street, and pounded on the door of the veterinarian's office with the kitten. And luckily, the veterinarian was in there caring for another sick animal. So Spooky got in. The veterinary said, you know, I can try and save him, but it's probably going to take a lot of time and a lot of money. You'll need to stay around to help pay for things. And if you want to commit yourself to this, then I will try and save his life. And so Bill did. And Spooky ended up living with Bill for 20 years and helping him find a way to reconnect back with the humans in his life.
And I want to talk more about Spooky when we come back from a break, because there are some really remarkable stories about that cat. And we also want to hear about the remarkable cats that have touched your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guests today are Vicki Myron. She was the director of the Spencer Public Library, and she has written about the library cat Dewey in the new book Dewey's Nine Lives, along with some other remarkable cats. And also with us is Carol Grillion, who's a cat behavior expert and the president of the board of the Animal Rescue League in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and my guests today are Vicki Myron. She used to be the director of the public library in Spencer, Iowa. She was also the best friend of Dewey, the library cat, who lived there for 19 years, and she wrote the best-selling book, Dewey, about his life. She's also written a new book called Dewey's Nine Lives, the legacy of the small-town library cat who inspired millions. It tells a couple of new stories about Dewey and stories about other remarkable cats as well. Also with us is Carol Grillion, who's a cat behavior expert and president of the board of the Animal Rescue League in Des Moines. And we'd love to hear your stories as well about cats that have really shaped your life, touched your life. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Vicki, before the break, we were talking about Spooky, the little kitten that fell from the sky into the life of Bill, who was a Vietnam vet with post-traumatic stress syndrome. He'd been sort of rambling through life, unable to make connections with anyone or anything, and he made a connection with this little kitten that he saved. And when you write about Bill's life with this cat, you know, I am a cat lover. I live mm-hmm. with eight cats, and I would never dream of doing things with my cats that Bill did with Spooky.
I know. It was a little spooky, but...
But they clearly loved one another and got along well together.
At
one point in his life, Bill was working 5 days on, 5 days off, and he would just leave Spooky and his companion cat at the apartment mm-hmm. for five whole days without him, and then go back and resume life. But tell me about their love of the motorcycle.
Well, I think that's a very funny part of the story. Excuse me, I have a cough and a tickle this morning. But,
that's all right.
One of my favorite parts of Bill's story is picturing him as a motorcycle guy driving around the country, but with Spooky. He actually fit Spooky with a little motorcycle helmet. Had one made for a cat, and then little clear eye goggles. And they would ride around. As long as Bill was going less than 25 miles an hour, Spooky would ride on the front of the handlebars. And they would even ride to Sturgis, South Dakota every year for the motorcycle rally up there. So I get this wonderful, funny picture in my mind of this big, burly ex-Marine who has a Harley Davidson and a cat riding happily on the front of motorcycle with him.
So. Right, and they just cruised through Sturgis with all of those other motorcycles
yes.
around, and Spooky loved it.
Mm-hmm.
When Spooky did die, he was 19 years old, or maybe he was 20 years old, and he'd
funny.
He'd had a very long, amazing life for a cat that started with those horrible injuries.
Plus, he was an indoor-outdoor cat. He moved many places. At one point, one of the people who was in Bill's life tried to get rid of him by throwing mm-hmm. him in a dump. Mm-hmm. How did Spooky come back from that?
Well, it was just tenacity. The woman that Bill was living with didn't like the cat at all and told Bill that the cat had run away, and Bill knew that wasn't the truth, knew that Spooky would come back, and looked for 3 weeks and had basically given up when someone told him that the woman he was staying with had taken the cat to a dump about 20 miles away. And so eventually he found Spooky. Spooky came back to him. Took 3 weeks to do it. And Spooky was very thin and had some fights and some problems, but he was right back in Bill's life immediately, and they reconnected. So they had another one of those special bonds I talk about in the book,
right.
The amazing things, relationships that people can have with an animal.
Carol, we hear stories about cats who come back from long distances away. I know many people have experienced that. Do we know how cats are able to do that?
You know, there has been, you know, plenty of research and, you know, analysis to try to figure that out. And, you know, I've never, ever seen a really concrete answer to that. It seems to just be, you know, a sense that they can travel. I mean, you've heard the stories of, you know, somebody moves states away and their cat, you know, got away from them while they were moving and shows up back at the original house. And there just isn't any, you know, concrete answer yet as to how cats seem to have that sixth sense. I tend to think they perhaps just have the sixth sense to be able to find their way to their, you know, bonding areas or bonding people.
Scott is on the line in Mason City. He called 866-780-9100. Hello, Scott.
Morning. My mother is the cat lady of St. Joe, Missouri. She's got half a dozen or so. They just show up, and she catches them and takes them to the vet and gets them spayed or neutered. But one morning, one of her black and white tomcats shows up with a what she thought was a mouse in its mouth, and it turned out to be just a days-old kitten. And so she gathered it up. She said, oh, no, you know, tomcat did what tomcats do, and they realized the kitten was alive. So Tuxedo Tommy took off, and over the course of the next 2 hours shows up with a total of six little kittens. And when my mother investigated, taking these to the vet, she found the mother cat had been hit on the road, and this tomcat rescued all these little ones, which she ended up bottle feeding and raising to be about, I think the oldest one made it about 11 or 12 years.
Wow. That is a remarkable story and an amazing act of compassion. Carol, people don't give cats a lot of credit for that kind of compassion.
They don't. And Charity, that is something, you know, from like Animal Rescue League and other shelters, I believe, you know, really try to get that message out that, you know, these cats who were long thought of by society to be independent and aloof are actually, you know, amazing, amazing creatures who do those types of things consistently. And, you know, we hear the stories at the Animal Rescue League all the time of, you know, boy, my house, I'd left, you know, something on and there was smoke and my cat came and woke me up, or stories such as the caller just talked about with these cats, you know, bringing other cats or kittens who, you know, need help to a place where they know they will get help. I mean, that happened to a very, very dear friend of mine whose cat, who was an inside-outside cat, showed up one day with a injured cat, that adult, which, you know, I truly believe this cat, you know, brought this cat to her because she knew she would help, and she did. And so, yeah, you absolutely hear these stories all the time. And the Animal Rescue League takes in, you know, thousands and thousands of homeless cats every year, and behind every one of those cats, you know, just an amazing story about them. And they really haven't really gotten what I believe is their due by society yet. But boy, I think people are learning. Cats have, you know, recently surpassed being the number one owned pet in society today over dogs.
Well, Vicki, one of the things that is a connecting thread in a lot of your stories is that when someone saves an animal, when they, you know, just as you saved Dewey and Bill saved Spooky, when somebody rescues an animal, there seems to be, and this is more of a human behavior question than a cat behavior question, but there seems to be a much stronger bond that is created. Vicki, what have you picked up from all of the stories that you've heard about that?
Well, I think that's genuinely true. I mean, I've heard from millions of people around the world, and still I am, about their relationships with cats. But I think it's true that the ones who were rescued, the ones who really needed help, seem to be so much more grateful. Of course, other cats form marvelous bonds with humans too, but it seems that the cats who need it the most have the most to give back to their human, and have done some amazing things to help their human live their life to the fullest.
It also seems like for people, and again, this is on human behavior, not cat behavior, but that act of compassion, in some ways, they end up saving themselves.
I think that's very true.
Carol, you've had a lot of opportunities to observe those kinds of acts of compassion. What do you think it does for the people that you see to interact with an animal in that way?
You know, I have had that amazing opportunity over the years, and I've seen, you know, kids that are struggling in school, kids that are struggling with relationships come into the league. I've seen adults come in, and they've maybe lost a spouse or a significant other, and they're alone. And all sorts of stories like that. And you see them adopt a cat, or, you know, kids spend time with the cats at the shelter. And you can see it's a dual type of thing. It's kind of like Vicki was just saying. I absolutely think that, you know, these cats save us as humans as much mm-hmm. as, you know, we save them. And I agree. You know, you adopt a cat from a shelter or save one from, you know, something that's happening out, you know, in society, whether it be hurt, injured, whatever. I think those cats know that you've helped them. And I think those bonds are amazingly strong. And over the years, I have as often heard, you know, boy, that cat's so lucky that they got to live with you. I have as often heard the human answer back, the cat saved me. I was the lucky one. Mm-hmm. And I think those bonds between humans and cats are amazingly strong and unbreakable.
Vicki, you also write about a lot of people who didn't think that they had room in their hearts for a cat. And one of those women was Vicki Kluver. I'm mm-hmm. not sure I'm saying her last name correctly.
But, yes, that is correct.
All right. She was a single mom, mm-hmm. a career woman, really working very hard to raise her daughter and to try to make her way in the world. And she didn't think she liked cats and certainly didn't have the time or energy to give to a cat. But tell me about the kitten that came into her life.
Well, she actually got the kitten for her daughter. It was not for her. She didn't call herself a cat person, didn't really care for a cat, thought of those stereotypes of being aloof and independent and on their own. But her little girl desperately wanted a cat, so Vicki finally caved in and got a kitten for her. And the kitten actually bonded with Vicki instead of her daughter.
But tell me, I know she had picked out this kitten. She thought he was an independent, exciting kitten. But when she went to the apartment,
right,
where the owner of the apartment, the person who owned the cats, was not there, had left on vacation.
It was a remarkable story in its own. It was Christmas Eve. She had to pick up the kitten for Christmas morning to surprise her daughter. And her friend that had the kittens was gone, and indeed had a friend or a sister staying there watching the kittens. And all of the kittens had gotten out of the box and were wandering the apartment. And by the time Vicki Kluver got there, they'd found all of the kittens wandering around except the one that she had decided to adopt. And finally, Vicki, after looking for hours, decided to give up and go home and use the restroom first before she left, and found this little black kitten in the toilet, basically dead, had drowned in the water. And that was the cat that they had decided to adopt. So she started rubbing him, and there was some movement, and she decided if the cat was tenacious enough and strong enough to have flung itself into the toilet, then maybe it was strong enough to live. And so they adopted what she eventually called CC, which stood for Christmas Cat. And it took years of nursing this cat back to health, who couldn't ever really keep food down and had lots of breathing problems from a near-drowning experience. But as she says in the book, there is no one, not her daughter, not her mother, not anyone in the world, who ever loved her more than that cat named Cookie, had a major impact on her. And unhappily didn't form a real bond with the daughter, liked her well enough, but knew that Vicki Kluver was the person who had saved her or him, and that's where the magical bond was.
Well, and maybe Vicki needed a cat more than her daughter did in the end. Just another amazing story. And we'd love to hear your stories of cats that have touched your life, have changed your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, Vicki, Dewey touched your life in so many ways. I mean, he was your best friend and was there for you through so many things. He touched so many people's lives. But he also radically changed your life because you had the opportunity to tell his story and and write that first book and write this book as well. But you also give him credit for your recent marriage in some ways.
I do. I do. I had been alone. I mean, I've dated hundreds of guys, never wanted to have another serious relationship. I was too busy with my career. I had plenty of friends. I had a very full, happy life. And I dated enough guys to dance and do the things I wanted to do. But I wanted to stay very independent and never get married again. And after Dewey passed away and I started writing this book, I was still not looking for a man in my life, but went to a club that I've been going to for years, probably 10, 11 years, called Storm and Norman's, where my best friend's husband plays lead guitar in the band out there. And I love to go there and dance because I've always loved to dance, and that was my way back to recovery after my illnesses. Instead of exercising, I've always danced to keep in shape. And so I went to a dance at Storm and Norman's about 3 years ago and met a guy who was a friend of Norm and Jeanette, the owners, and who bartended for them at dances just as a favor once in a while. And the amazing thing is I'd never seen him before. He'd never seen me before. We'd both been there for 10 years not paying any attention to each other. Had gone to a lot of the same dances, but that particular evening he said there was kind of a glow around me while everyone else in the crowd was gray. And so he asked me to dance, and we started dancing, and I looked into his eyes, and it was very similar in the same way that I had looked into Dewey's eyes that first day when I found him in the book drop. It was an openness almost as if you could see through their eyes into their soul, that they were both, you know, really good spirits. And it scared me a little bit, but I saw the same depth of emotion and the same loyalty and the same strength.
And you immediately recognized that.
I did.
That's like Dewey.
Mm-hmm. It was a strange experience. It really actually scared me off a little bit, but I knew there was something there. And so later on, I talked to Norman Jeanette, and I said, is this guy a good guy? And she said, oh, he's a very good guy. I went to high school with him. And she said, I can do this. I used to do this in high school. She said, let Norman and I hook you up. And I planned on just finding a new dancing partner and someone I could have some good times with, but ended up finding Glenn Albertson and falling in love, and we are now married. So,
well, congratulations. And Glenn also is a cat lover. Tell me about his cat, Rusty, and how Rusty came into his life.
Well, Glenn had cats and dogs all of his life. Many, many animals. Animals and babies adore Glenn. They just naturally trust him. They see his open heart, and they're not afraid of him at all. But he was working on an old Studebaker, trying to save it from the junk pile, and was laying with his head under the dashboard one day, working under there with all the wiring, and felt something on his chest and looked, and there was this little tiny kitten curled up on his chest who laid down and just started purring and talking to him. And for the next 2 weeks, Rusty would appear at Glenn's shop where he was working on this car, and finally Glenn convinced Rusty to come home with him when it started to get colder at night. And so Rusty became Glenn's cat, and he was a wonderfully warm cat who was a Norwegian van cat, and they love water. So one of Rusty's favorite things was to jump into the bathtub when it had about 4 or 5 inches of nice warm water in it, and he would spread himself out and swish his tail back and forth and just luxuriate in a bubble bath.
Oh my gosh, I've known a lot of cats. I've never known a cat that would do that.
I know.
And Rusty helped Glenn through a very difficult time.
Yes, Rusty helped Glenn also. Rusty had come into Glenn's life after some really hard times with failed marriages and the loss of his children and some of his jobs. And Glenn had just decided he had given up on finding a companion for the rest of his life, that he was going to settle for music and Rusty being there for him, and that would be about it, except for his family. And so they were pretty close.
So
then when I came into his life, then Rusty liked me immediately. But the other wonderful thing was that Glenn's youngest daughter, Jenny, who's 20 now, adored Rusty the whole time she was growing up, and taught him the butterball exercises. When he got too fat, he'd sit on her lap and she'd make him stretch his arms out and do exercises. And so happily now that Glenn and I got married and have Paige Turner, our new kitten, Rusty lives very happily at Jenny's house in Sioux City.
Well, and we have only a moment left, but Paige Turner is a kitten who came into your life in very much the same way that Dewey did, but he's a very different cat.
Right. We didn't plan on adopting a cat right away again. Because we travel so much with the books, we didn't think it was fair to bring a cat into our lives. But another poor victim cat was discovered by a school administrator, brought down to the library hoping that they would adopt him. And he looked a lot like Dewey. Same color fur, green eyes instead of gold, but perfectly beautiful little cat. And the library said no.
But you said yes.
Well, they turned him away. They said no more cats in the library. They couldn't ever imagine finding a way to measure up to Dewey, which is absolutely true.
Right.
So,
well,
yes.
Vicki, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. It was a great joy.
Vicki Myron is the author of Dewey's Nine Lives and, of course, the best friend of Dewey, the library cat. And Carol Grillion, thank you as well.
Thank you. My pleasure.
A cat behavior expert and president of the board of the Animal Rescue League in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.